Good morning. We are learning Masechet Zvachin. Today's daf is daf Kuf Ches. We are on the very bottom of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, page 107b, all the way on the very bottom. This chapter is dealing with the topic of the prohibitions of the Torah not to slaughter a sacrifice outside of the temple and not to offer, that is, to burn on an altar the fats and insides of a sacrifice outside of the temple. These are prohibitions that we've learned about over the last few days that carry with them the terrible penalty of kares, of the soul being cut off and a person dying prematurely. So we are towards the very bottom here of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. Itmar, it was taught in the yeshiva, an argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Hamala, let's say a person takes a sacrifice, maybe it was even slaughtered inside the Azara, but then it was taken out, and then he offers up on an altar some of this sacrifice, but what he offered up, ein bo kizayis, was less than an olive size worth, but of meat, but etzem mashlima lo kizayis, but together with that meat there was a bone. So he offered up less than an olive size worth of meat, but if you add the bone that was attached to the meat, then it is actually an olive size, or even more than an olive size. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev, Rabbi Yochanan says, so that is guilty, that is the violation of offering up carbon outside of the Azara. If it was on purpose, he deserves kares. If it was well, a mistake, he has to bring a carbon chatas. This is the question. Is the bones attached to meat considered meat, or is it considered not meat? Reish Lakish, Amar Pater, Reish Lakish says he has only offered up less than an olive size, and therefore he is exempt on purpose from kares and by mistake from a chatas. Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Chayev, Rabbi Yochanan says he's chayev because Rabbi Yochanan holds chiburei olam kolam dami. That which is attached to the meat of a sacrifice is already considered the meat of the sacrifice. Reish Lakish Amar Pater, Reish Lakish said he's exempt, because chipuri olin lav kolin damu. That which is attached to the meat of the sacrifice doesn't have the status of a sacrifice. So that completes that discussion about bones. So now we're going to talk about salt. Hey, Rava. Rava asked the following question. Let's say it's not a bone. It's not a piece of meat. It's the head of an olah sa'of. Hamale rosh ben yonah. Someone takes the head of a ben yonah, of a young bird that has had its head severed with a malika, with the thumb, as part of an olah sa'of, and he offers it shein bo kizayis, and it's less than an olive worth of it. He offers it outside of the azara. But then all carbonos need to have some salt placed on them. So the salt that was put on, umelach mashlima lekizayis, the salt completes the amount to be an olive size. So now, is he going to be guilty for offering outside of the azara, deserving of kares, and by mistake, achatas? Or do we say that salt, everybody agrees, doesn't combine to complete the amount, and what he offered was less than an olive size, so he's not guilty? Rava from Parzakaya said to Rav Ashi, Lav Hainu Pluktayu, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Isn't this the very same argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? That according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that bones attached to meat are considered meat, he would say salt attached to the head of a bird is also like the head of the bird, and therefore the person has offered a full kazayas in the wrong place, and he deserves kares or achatas. According to Reish Lakish, who says that bones are not meat, like Baruch, he'll also say that salt is not meat. So he'll say that in a case where the person didn't offer a full amount of meat, but just with the bone it's considered a full amount of meat. So when it wasn't a full amount of meat, and only with the salt is it a full amount of meat, it's not considered a full amount of meat, and he would not be obligated in kares or a achatas. That's what Rava suggested. Then the Gemara said, no. Tiboy Rabbi Yochanan, It could be a question both according to Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that the bones do combine with the meat, or according to Reish Lakish, who holds bones do not combine with meat. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it says bones combine with meat to complete the amount. Maybe I can look on Rabbi Yochanan Hasam Elab Etzem Demina de Basru. Maybe he only says that with a bone, because a bone is basically the same type as the meat. You know, it's natural.
The same type. What does that mean? The same thing.
It doesn't. Isn't it naturally created that they're both together? The bone was in the meat was on the bone.
I know, but it's not.
Not necessarily. If you melted the bone, the insides of the bone, the marrow is meat. It is meat.
The definition is to have a size of a meat less than an olive. Okay, that's what it is. Bone is not meat.
And maybe it is meat. Bones are inedible meat, or not yet edible meat, or hard meat. But it's all naturally together.
The chicken bones, you could chew it, but you know, the cow bone.
They make soup with cow bones.
Also, buko.
Yeah.
They melt them. They make jelly out of them.
So what happens is it becomes two trips. Is it the same thing, Rabbi? Like each trip less than, you know?
That wouldn't be obligated.
It would not be up. If it does it like 10 times, 10...
Well, we're going to see that later in the top, but presumably now not. So again, see by the Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says the question of salt on meat, whether that could complete it to be a kizayis, is a question even according to Rabbi Yochanan. Because I can look on Rabbi Yochanan also. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan only said it over there with meat on a bone. That's the meat of the basu, because bone and a meat, when you have bones and you have meat, the bones are the type of the meat. So since bones and meat are the same type, the bones complete the meat. But salt is certainly not the same type of meat as the head of the bird. So the salt doesn't combine with the head of the bird. And see, by the Reish Lakish, you could ask a question according to Reish Lakish too. Maybe Reish Lakish says that a bone does not complete the meat. Because if you would separate the bone from the meat, everyone would agree. Everyone would agree there's no mitzvah to bring it back and to bring it up onto the altar. But when you put salt on the head of a chicken, so once the salt goes onto the head of the chicken, the salt gets the status of the chicken. And then the parish, if the salt were to separate, mitzvah la'asukin is a mitzvah to bring it back. So since it now has the status of chicken with a mitzvah to bring back, if it were to fall off, maybe it completes the size of meat of the chicken. So then here, maybe Reish Lakish didn't say that the salt is something separate. The salt, he would agree, completes the size of the chicken. Or maybe we shouldn't make these logical arguments. We'll say, no, Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that bones don't complete the size of meat, who holds bones complete the size of meat, will also hold that salt completes the size of meat. And Reish Lakish, who holds bones don't complete, will hold that salt doesn't complete. So when it says teiku, we don't know. So we have an argument about bones with meat, whether that can make it considered the full amount that was offered in the wrong spot. We asked the question about salt with bird meat, whether that can make it considered the full amount offered in the wrong spot. And the conclusion is, it's not necessarily dependent on your view about bones. We don't know what's the answer with salt. Eliyahu HaNavi, exactly. We're waiting for Tishbi Atari, it's Kushios V'Abayos. We're waiting for Eliyahu HaNavi to come and to tell us. So going back to the Mishnah, which began this perek, which we started on Shabbos, the Mishnah taught that there was an argument about a person who slaughters a korban outside the Azara, and he offers up parts of the korban outside of the Azara. So according to the Tanna Kamma, he would be obligated two chatos, one for slaughtering, one for the offering. As Rabbi Yosef Levi says like this, since he slaughtered outside, he didn't offer up a korban, because the moment of his slaughtering, it already wasn't a good thing. When would you ever be obligated for offering up a korban outside if it was slaughtered inside, and then it was taken outside and offered up outside? So the Chacham said back to Rabbi Yossi, well, even your case doesn't make sense. Because the moment it was taken outside, it became disqualified. So by the time he's offering, he's not offering a carbon anymore. And you're saying if what he's offering is not a carbon, there's no obligation of offering a carbon. That was the back and forth. So now, what's Rabbi Yossi going to answer? So the Gemara is going to suggest two possibilities. One from Rabbi, and one from Rabbi Lazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon. Hey, should Rabbi tackle Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Rabbi Yudah Anasi gave an answer as if he is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. No, I'll tell you why. If he slaughters inside and takes it out, even though it gets disqualified while he's taking it out, there is a violation for the offering when it's done outside. While something slaughtered outside and offered outside, there is no violation for the offering outside. Here's the difference. If he slaughters inside and he takes it out, and then he offers it up outside, it had a moment when it was a good kosher carbon.
Good,
when it's slaughtered inside, it's a good kosher carbon. Now it should be going on to the altar. So it's on track to be fine. Then it goes, take it out. Okay. So since it was on track to be fine, that's considered an offering up of a carbon in the wrong spot. But how do you compare that to someone who slaughters a sacrifice outside? Umala b'chutz. And he offered it up outside. It never was on track as a good carbon. From the very beginning, it's no good. From the very beginning, it was slaughtered outside. That was one answer. Answer number two. Hey, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon talks to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon suggests what Rabbi Yossi Aglili's answer is. Here's the difference between slaughtering inside and taking it out and then offering it outside versus slaughtering outside and offering it up outside. If he slaughters inside, he takes it out and he offers it up outside. Shekein kodesh makabla. That's the type of thing which is psulo bakodesh. It only became disqualified in the temple. It wasn't disqualified before like a blemish. It was disqualified in the temple once it was taken out. So as Roger has pointed out for us many times, things that become disqualified in the temple, bidi'eved, if they're put on the altar, get reaccepted by the altar. So it's something which could ultimately be reaccepted. Whereas if it was slaughtered outside, it was disqualified before it got to the temple. So then it can't even go into the altar b'di'evet. So then if it's offered up, you weren't offering up, but it's a sacrifice. You're offering up something which is already no good. But how do you compare that to something slaughtered outside? Shein kodesh makablo. The holy altar would not cause it to be reaccepted. So Gemara says, what's the difference between these two answers? So Gemara is going to give two explanations. The difference would be if the carbon was slaughtered at night and then in the temple and then it was taken out and outside it was offered up. So if you say the issue is because it was never, something was once good, then it became no good. This was never good. It was slaughtered at night. But if you say the issue is psula bakodesh, this is a disqualification in the temple, the slaughtering at night.
Where was the blood?
And therefore,
blood, they don't even talk about in between. The blood gets sprinkled.
Maybe the blood was taken out too.
But if the blood was sprinkled, it would be okay. It would. Once the blood is sprinkled, it resolves the chet. If it's a chatas.
Correct.
So,
but then you'd have another sin of halah b'chutz, of offering something up outside. One second. The other answer, Rabbi said, I'll give you another case. Kibla b'kli choli kabeinai. Let's say the blood was caught in a secular vessel in the temple and then walked out and sprinkled outside of the azara. If the issue is haisala shasa kosher, was it ever on track? No, in terms of blood, this was never on track. It was right away accepted in a secular vessel.
Yeah.
But if the issue is psula bakodesh, this is a disqualification that's happening in the temple. And since it's happening in the temple, ultimately, if it would go on the Mizbeach, it would have worked. So therefore, there would be still the violation when it went outside. Now, Baruch, a question.
What are the times for the Shechita, kosher time?
By day.
Is it like in the morning till Mincha time? Is that what?
Anytime during the day.
But before Mincha.
No,
you're right that all karbanos have to be offered before the afternoon karban, with the exception of karban Pesach. But generally, karbanos have to be offered before the afternoon karban.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay.
Next. The Mishnah goes on to say we have a similar argument in regards to the prohibition for a Kohen Tameh to eat karbanos. Okay, so if a Kohen Tameh eats a karban, he deserves karis. Chacham said that applies whether the karban that he's eating is tar or the karban that he's eating is itself tameh. Either way, he deserves karis. Yosef Levi says, no, if the karban that he's eating is tameh, so he doesn't deserve karis. If the carbon that he's eating is tar, he deserves karis. The Chacham said, Rabbi Yosef, that makes no sense. The moment he puts it in his mouth, it became tameh. And so then already he shouldn't be deserving of karis when he swallows it, because it already was tameh once he put it into his mouth. So that was the conversation. Tameh shachal, ben kodesh, etc. So the Gemara says again the same. Shapir kamer Rabban, Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Rabban seemed to have a very good rejoinder to Rabbi Yosef Aglili. They say to him, what are you saying that the person who's tamei is only going to be chayiv karis if he eats a carbon which is tahor, a carbon which is pure? He's never going to eat a carbon which is pure. The moment he puts it in his mouth, the carbon became tamei. He's only eating it once he swallows it, and at that point he's swallowing a carbon which is tamei. So Amar Rava, so Rava said like this.
Wow.
The rabbis are like this. It's all a misunderstanding. The rabbanon are thinking that Rabbi Yossi Aglili's logic is that a karban which became tameh loses its sanctity. So once it loses its sanctity, so then there's no big sin for a kohen who's tameh for swallowing something which has lost its sanctity. But that's not what's going on at all. Rabbi Yossi Aglili agrees that a karban which is tameh has not lost its sanctity. He agrees to that. What's going on here is something else. It's an argument whether there's a concept of Isur Chalal Isur. Mm-hmm. We learned in Yevamos that there's a whole point, Ein Isur Chalal Isur. If something's already prohibited, another prohibition can't take effect on it. Mm-hmm. But there are those who say that the second prohibition can enter and take effect on top of the first prohibition, so long as the second prohibition is Kolel, it includes more things than the first prohibition included. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili apparently disagrees with that. He holds that never does a second prohibition take effect on something which is already prohibited. So therefore, my Rabbi explained like this. Let's say the Kohen had become personally impure. And then the meat of the Karban becomes impure. So which Easter was first? The Easter on him is first. Then both Rabbi Yossi and the Chacham would agree that if he were to eat meat of that meat of the carbon, he is guilty of kares for the tummy eating kachin. Shekein tumas haguf bekares, because the first thing was tumas haguf, and that carries with it a penalty of kares. Keep pliki, what's the argument here? It's about isur chalal isur. It's in the following case. The kohen was tohor, but nitma basar, the meat became tummy. So now that the meat is tameh, the kohen's not allowed to eat it. V'yacharkach nitma aguf, and then the kohen became tameh. Rabbanan savi, Rabbanan say, aminan migu. We say isur kolel. We say like this. Before he became impure, when it was only the meat that was impure, what was prohibited? This piece of meat.
Yeah.
Once he became impure, all the meats of all the karbanos are prohibited to him. So since him becoming impure creates a prohibition on much more things than just this, therefore it can take effect on this too. And therefore, if he now eats this piece that was impure before he was impure, he would be violating the sin of a Kohen Tameh eating Kachim, and he would deserve Karis. But Rabbi Yossi Aglili is of the opinion, Lo Amin Amiku, we don't say that a second prohibition takes effect, even when the second prohibition is broader than the first. So the first prohibition was that the meat was tameh. It was prohibited to him. So that's it. It's prohibited to him because it was meat tameh. The fact that he now became tameh doesn't impact this piece of meat. Good morning. It'll impact other pieces of meat, but it won't impact this piece of meat. We don't say migu. We don't say that an Isur Kolel, a broader prohibition, takes effect. That's the view of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And since the penalty of karis is only for the kohen tameh who eats kachim, and not for kachim tmeim that get eaten, therefore there's no kares. So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, nihid migulu amrina. Okay, he doesn't think of Isur Kolel. He doesn't say that since something reaches other matters, therefore it can reach this matter too. Right? Since that when he's tameh, he can't eat any kachim. That's why this kachim that he already couldn't eat, he should also be prohibited with. But still, Tasi, Tumas Agufta Chamira, V'tachal Al Tumas Basar. We should say that there is Isur Chalal Isur. The second prohibition should take effect on top of the first prohibition, because the second prohibition is much stricter. The first prohibition was a kachim that were tameh, don't eat. Yeah, but there's no penalty of kares for eating kachim that are tameh. Whereas the second prohibition is a kohen who's tameh eating kachim. A kohen who's tameh eating kachim has a penalty of kares. It's a much more severe prohibition. So Amar Rav Ashi, you're right, in terms of kares it's more severe, but in terms of other aspects it's less severe. So who's to say that it's more severe, that it should take effect on top of a pre-existing prohibition? Amar Rav Ashi said, why are you assuming that the Kohen being tameh is a more severe prohibition than Karbanos being tameh? Dilma Tumas Basar Chamura. Maybe a carbon being tamei is more severe. Shekeinein l'tara b'mikvah. Because if a carbon is tamei, you can't remove it. You can't put it into the mikvah. Whereas if he's tamei, yes, it's true that if he eats while he's tamei, he gets a big penalty. But he can go to the mikvah and remove his tumah. Yep. So since it's something which is removable, maybe the fact that it's removable makes it less than something which is not removable, even though the punishment for that which is removable is much stronger than the punishment for that which is not removable. Maybe that something being permanent makes it stricter. So therefore, that's the view of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, Ein Isur Chalal Isur. That's what he's trying to say. The Chacham didn't understand him, and they were asking him the wrong question. Yeah.
So it's the idea that everyone really holds up Isur Chalal Isur if it's more comprehensive, but Rabbi Yossi says maybe it's not more comprehensive. Is that what we're saying? We're saying everybody
holds up. It's not more powerful. I was saying not more powerful, comprehensive. Clearly, Rabbi Yosef even says, even though the second one is more comprehensive and included more things, we still say Ein Isur Chalal Isur.
So, but I guess what I'm trying to understand is, does he hold to that klal or not?
Isur Kolel? No.
Amen. So why does it matter that this is not more powerful? If it is more powerful, it doesn't hold of it.
That's a separate issue. There's the issue of Yisur Kolel. Do we say that since the second got more things, it'll go on to this too? Once it's going on that, it'll go on this. And then there's a second question. Do we say that the second is much stronger, so it can go right on top of this, because it's a much bigger one, it's a much stronger one? He says it's not much stronger.
That's not Isur Kolel.
That's not Isur Kolel.
Rabbi, he says when he Tomei Kohen, he puts a kachim meat in his mouth.
Right.
Okay? Still, the meat is kachim, but right. Once he swallows it, it becomes Tomei.
No, once he touches it, it becomes Tomei.
Touches, right. That's exactly what I was going to say. That's
right. Once he touches it, it becomes done.
Okay.
So again, the Mishnah, this chapter is dealing with the two prohibitions. One prohibition of slaughtering a carbon outside of the Azara, and the second prohibition of offering up a carbon outside the Azara. These are two different sections. One was both in chapter 17 of Vayikra. We learned... it might be a comparison between the two sections, but these are two different laws. The law of offering up a carbon outside of the Azara and the law of slaughtering a carbon outside of the Azara. It says the Mishnah, in certain ways, they're each stricter than the other. Chomer b'shchita mi ba'aliya, u ba'aliya mi b'shchita. There's a stringency of slaughtering outside of the Azara that the prohibition of offering outside of the Azara doesn't have. And there's a stringency of offering outside of the Azara that shchita out of the Azara doesn't have. Chomer b'shchita, there's a stringency of slaughtering outside of the Azara. Sha'ashochet lehed yod chayim. Somebody takes a carbon and he slaughters it, not for the sake of God, but for the sake of Reuven outside of the Azara, he would be guilty with the sin of slaughtering a carbon outside of the Azara. However, v'hamala lehed yod patur. If a person offers up pieces of a carbon outside of the Azara for the sake of Reuven, maybe it's idolatry even, he's worshipping Reuven, okay, he'll have the sin of idolatry, but he won't have the sin of ma'ala b'chutz, offering karbanos outside of the Azara. So that's one stringency. The other way, chomer ba'aliyah, there's a stringency to offering outside of the Azara that there doesn't exist in slaughtering. What's the stringency? The following. Shnayim shachzu b'sak in the shachtu. If two people together hold a knife and they slaughter a karban outside of the Azara, p'turim, they are exempt. Parachzu b'ever, but if two people hold a limb, the helu, and they lift it, they offer it up. Chayav, and they are both obligated. All right, next issue. Hela, let's say he offers up some of the carbon. He forgot that it was a carbon. He offered up some of it outside of the Azara. Then he remembered. Then again he forgot. And Chazavahela, again, he offered up from that animal some more of the carbon outside of the Azara. Again, he forgot. He remembered. Again, he forgot. And again, he went and took from this carbon and offered up some of it outside of the Azara. According to Rabbi Shimon, for each offering, he has to bring a separate carbon chatas. Rabbi Yossi says, no, he only has to bring a single carbon chatas. Next question, next issue. So first issue of the Mishnah was stringency of shechita more than aliyah, stringency of aliyah more than shechita. Second issue was pieces versus the whole. Third issue. What when we talk about offering on what? Eino chayv ad shi'al rosh ha-mizbeach. According to the Tanakhama, he had to make an altar outside of the Azara and offer on top of the altar. Rabbi Shimon says, if you el al asela, even if he offers up outside of the Azara on a stone, on a big boulder, or ala evan on a stone, chayiv, he would be obligated for the sin of offering outside of the Azara. Okay, starting with the first issue of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about the prohibition of slaughtering outside of the Azara and offering karbanos outside of the temple courtyard. And the Mishnah said that there's a stringency. Slaughtering does not apply if two people are handling it. Offering does apply. But slaughtering applies if it was slaughtered for the sake of some individual. Whereas offering doesn't apply if it was offered for the sake of an individual. It had to be offered for God outside of the Azara for to trigger this sin. So the Gemara now says, what are the sources for these differences? Why is it that if he offers it up for an individual, he's exempt? Because the verse says, Lashem for God. But even in regards to slaughtering, it also says Lashem. It says Vel Pesach Omeyadlo Vio Laakriv Karban Lashem. No, Shani Asa. But in regards to slaughtering, the Amar Kra, there's another verse that says Ish Ish Mi Beis Yisrael. So the fact that it says Ish Ish, a man or a man, it's to say even a man offering up for another man is considered the act of slaughtering outside of the Azara that triggers the Kares penalty. One second, Gabbai Allah Nami, but in regards to offering, also we have the phrase Ish Ish. Ish Ish means Beis Yisrael. Uminager, Asher Yagur B'socham, Asher Yaleh, Lo Zavach. So Gemara says, no, Ish Ish, in regards to offering, Mibayla L'shnaim She'alu Be'ever Chayav. That's to teach me that if two people were both offering up a limb, they're obligated. One second. If the words are the same, so make it the same law in each case. Yachi, if that's the case, achanami. Why don't you say in regards to slaughtering that I need ish ish b'boyle, I need ish ish to teach me l'shnayim shachzu b'sakin, that even if two are holding the knife, shachzu and together they're slaughtering, shechayav, that they're both obligated. So no, in regards to two people holding the knife, only one, it would not be obligated. Amar Kra, because the verse says in regards to slaughtering, Dam yechashev la ishahu, dam shafach v'nichras ha'ishahu mikerav amo. It'll be considered blood for that man. He has spilled blood. He will be cut off of his nation. Since it says ahu, he echad v'lo shnayim. Slaughtering can only apply to one, but not to two. That's tomorrow. One second. Yachi gabalah nam yoksiv. But in regards to offering, it also says Al Pesach Omeyadlo Vienu Lasoso So Lashem Anichraso Ishahu Me'amav, and that man will be cut off of his nation. It also says that man. So therefore, in regards to offering, also if two offer, it shouldn't be guilty. No, that verse of Ahu Miboyle we needed for something else. Limute to say to exclude Shogig Ones Umute to exclude someone who was making a mistake, who was out of his control, someone else was fooling him, and to say he doesn't get karis. Ha'ishahu, that man, the man who's fully aware, b'hava yaso, b'daito, is the one who gets karis. Someone who's making mistakes doesn't get karis. If that's what you need ahu for, so do the same with slaughtering. Yachi, if so, hachanami, why do we say that the hahu of slaughtering is to exclude two who slaughter? Say the hahu is to teach me that you only get karis if you're aware. Hachanami by the mute ona shagagul mute, to say that someone who's forced, who is making a mistake, who is fooled, doesn't get karis. The answer is in regards to slaughtering, it says hahu twice. Tre hahu ksiv. It says the word hahu twice. I'll read the verse. V'alehem tzom ish ish mi beis Yisrael asher yishchat shor o chesev o eiz b'machaneh o asher yishchat michutz l'machaneh ve'el pesach o el mo'ed lo hivio l'akriv korban l'Hashem lifnei mishkan Hashem dam yechashev li'ish ahu dam shafach v'nichras ha'ish ahu mikerav amo. It says the word ahu twice. So one time it says ahu to say that he has to be cognizant to be chayav kares, and the other time it's saying the word ahu, the only time is chayav kares if it's that man, if it's one man doing the slaughtering, not if it's two people doing the slaughtering. Trei ahu ksiv. So now the Gemara says, if so, velel Hashem. Lamali, so once you learn from ish ish to include that someone who slaughters for a man, he's also obligated. So why does the verse say in regards to slaughtering La Hashem for God? The answer is Lohotzi, Sarah Mishtaleach. That's to exclude someone who slaughters the goat sent to the wilderness outside of the Azara. Because since that's a goat that is not supposed to be slaughtered for God, it's supposed to be thrown off a cliff for God. So if it was slaughtered outside, it doesn't have the law of Shchute Chutz.
Rabbi, I never heard of two people shechting one animal. I never heard of all.
All right, maybe they did it.
Doesn't make sense. One is going to go this way, the other one going
to
go that
way. No, they have to hold the knife together and together slide across.
The shech may not be a kosher shech.
Okay, all right, so they're not going to be guilty for the law of slaughtering a carbon outside.
Why would you have to exempt the Sayyur Lazazal?
Yeah, he doesn't
stay
right?
Well, the same way we saw with the bird, that a bird normally gets malika, but a bird carbon which you slaughter outside has the violation of shlutei chutz. You might think the same with sayur la'azaz. All right, so now the Mishnah goes on and says, we're talking about the prohibition of slaughtering a carbon outside the azara and the prohibition of offering a carbon outside of the azara. Chomer ba'alah, there's a stringency of offering a carbon outside of the Azara, and it applies even when two people offered the pieces together. Ish ish, matam alomar, why does it say ish ish in regard to offering a carbon outside of the Azara? The Rabos, the second time it says ish is to include shnayim shachzu be'eber, if two people are together holding a limb, the halu and they offer it up, shechayav, and they are both guilty. Sheyach, I might have thought, valodinu, I should employ logic here. Uma shochet lehejet shechayav. What's stricter? I might have thought slaughtering is stricter than offering. What's the proof? Because slaughtering for an individual outside of the temple creates guilt. And yet, shnayim shavzu b'sakin, Baruch's favorite case, two people holding a knife, and they're slaughtering the shachtu p'tur, and they're exempt because of the word ahu. So then I would say, amal lehejo chapatur, when it comes to offering, an offering to a man is exempt. Tainu din shnayim shavzu p'tur, so certainly, since offering is less than slaughtering, if two offer together, they should be exempt. Talmud Loma, that's why I can't use logic, and I needed a verse. Ish, ish, to include even two who are offering up outside, that they're both guilty. Dear Rabbi Shimon, that's the view of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, the fact that it says in regards to offering, v'nichras ha'yishahu me'amav, and that person is to be cut off of his nation, ha'hu, that man, echa b'lo shnayim, only one gets kares, not two. So if two offer up an offering, they are exempt. One second. Him came out to Malom ish ish. So what are you going to do with the words ish ish? Nothing. Dibra Torah kalashum b'nei adam. The Torah is just talking the way people talk. And sometimes a person stammers and he says the words ish ish twice. Oh, very good.
There's no extra word.
What's that?
There's no single extra word.
This is extra. Dibra Torah kalashum b'nei adam. Torah speaks the way people speak. It's just the way people talk. Nothing to learn from it. So the Gemara is going to say, what's Reb Shimon going to do with the word ahu? Reb Shimon will tell you, like we said before, hi, ahu mi boile lemute shoge ganusu mute. The word ahu, that man is guilty and gets kares to say it. He has to be that man. He has to be intelligent. He can't be mistaken. He can't be forced against his will.
How was it?
Reb Yossi, he'll tell you, I learned that from the fact that he could have said ish. It could have said who, ish who. Why did it say hahu? And Reb Shimon will agree here to a logic similar to Reb Yossi. Hu hahu lo darish. The fact that it could have said who and it said hahu, that's not something to interpret. That's just Tibra Torah. Kilashom b'nei adam. So Gemara says, one second now. Reb Yossi, according to Reb Yossi, midahai ish ish, in regards to man, in regards to offering. He says it's just Dibra Torah, Kalashom b'nei adam. It's just the Torah speaking the way people speak. There's nothing to darshan from it. There's nothing to interpret from it. So, if that's the view of Reb Yossi, midahai ish ish Dibra Torah, Kalashom b'nei adam. If that's the case, then ahu ish ish, then the ish ish in regards to slaughtering should also be Dibra Torah, Kalashom b'nei adam. And then Ashokhet Lehejom Inel Edachayev. I would even know that if somebody slaughters for an individual outside of the Azara, Karban, he's guilty. So the answer is, you're right, he doesn't learn it from Ishish. He learns it from another phrase, what Fred was pointing out. The Torah says that a man who slaughters a Karban outside of the Azara, he's a spiller of blood. He learns it from that, from the fact that the Torah says, Nafkali, he derives it from the fact that the Torah says, Midam Yechoshev Liyashahu, it's considered blood for that man. Dam Shafach, he spilled blood. Why? What do you mean, spilled blood? That's to include Afilu Ashochet Le'ish. To include, even if he slaughters for a man, it's considered an act of Shkutei Chutz, slaughtering a carbon outside, and he is, in fact, deserving of Karis. Then the Mishnah had an argument between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Hela, if part of the carbon was offered up outside, and then another part of the carbon was offered outside. According to Rabbi Shimon, he'd have to bring two karbanos. If it was all mistakes, according to Rabbi Yossi, he wouldn't. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said, we're going to have different arguments here. What is the argument between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi? Reish Lakish says like this, Machlokas B'dal Be'evar. The argument is where he offered up four or five limbs. The Marksiv, one holds Rabbi Yossi. When the Torah says lasos oso to make it, from which we learned he's obligated for a complete but not for a partial. That is a kol behemoksiv on the entire animal, but not on any particular limb. So that's why he offered four or five limbs, and it's the whole animal. So he's chayiv one carbon. Umar sabur as Rabbi Shimon holds lasos oso a kol aver veaverksiv. That's referring to every single limb. Avo Aver Echad, but if he offered up a single limb in multiple pieces, Divrei Hakol, everyone would agree, Eino Chayev Ela Achas, he would only be Chayev a single karba, not for every little piece, because it says Lasos Oso, it has to be a Davar Shalem, and not a Davar Chaser, not something which is missing. Okay, we'll stop here.